From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. For most residents in the Cape Fear region, a daily bus ride isn't a typical part of the day. There are significantly more people who drive their own vehicles than those who choose public transportation. There are choice riders, some, but most of the people who use Wave Transit on a regular basis use it because they need it. And today, public transportation systems across the nation are facing serious funding challenges. On this edition of Coastline, we'll explore how those challenges are playing out locally. We'll also learn about some of the ways that Wave Transit is evolving. With us in the studio today to guide us through Wave Transit's new facilities, the new vehicles, and some of the seemingly intractable challenges is Albert Eby, Executive Director of the Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority. Albert Eby, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel. Appreciate you having us.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Do you ever ride the bus? Does the system work for you? Do you think a more expansive bus system would change life in the region for the better? Or do you prefer keeping public transit small and focusing public money on other projects? Give us a call and tell us what you think. 910-343-1138. You can also send your comments or questions to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at coastlinehqr. Albert Eby, top of mind for a lot of people is the strike that was threatened a couple of weeks ago by the bus drivers union. What's happening with that strike?
In the United States, transit is a very small industry, but it's funded particularly from the federal government through the Urban Mass Transit Act of 1964. One thing that the act did was it required systems to recognize in perpetuity unions, which leads us to a kind of peculiar situation in a right-to-work state like North Carolina. So we have a third-party management contractor company called First Transit that employs, hires, trains the drivers. They are collectively bargained. It's a local ATU 1328.
So those drivers aren't actually working for Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority.
That's correct. They're contract workers, but we do pay the management contractor for all their wages. So we've got some responsibility, but it is from just a fiduciary standpoint. So our understanding is that the strike has been the current collective bargaining agreement has been extended until August 14th while negotiations continue, and we feel that we have given our management contractor the adequate resources to respect the wages of their employees, our contract employees, while meeting our fiduciary obligation to the taxpayers who so generously fund us.
And for those who aren't familiar with this potential strike or the reasons behind it, what's the beef? What's the issue with the bus drivers?
Typically, strikes only occur after a collective bargaining agreement has expired, which is in the case here. And it oftentimes comes down to working conditions, wages, any number of things. I don't know the specifics here because they don't sit at the bargaining table. I would defer to our management contractor on that or to the union on that. But we do know that we've done an in-depth analysis of the labor rate for both bus drivers and mechanics. We know that the rate we pay is fair. We know that it's responsible not only to the contract employees but to the taxpayers here in Wilmington.
So how does that work? Does First Transit, this third-party employer, just pass along what Wave Transit pays through that structure? Explain how this works.
Sure. The way it works is we hire First Transit to be the employer of record. They hire the employees. Like I said, they train them. They're basically employees of a company called Transit Management of Wilmington, which is a subsidiary of First Transit. We pay all the direct costs for that as part of the contract. We also pay a small management fee, and we pay First Transit for four employees that are locally housed here in Wilmington. So all the costs of the transit system are borne by the Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority, but First Transit and Transit Management of Wilmington serve as the employer of record, and they're the ones that deal with management issues, discipline issues, and the collective bargaining agreement.
So then does it work something like an employment agency might? The employer pays a certain wage for a particular position, but then what that worker actually gets paid is something that he negotiates with his immediate employer?
In this particular situation, all the costs for the transit authority are passed on as actual costs. So what First Transit gets from the Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority is strictly a management fee, which is a fixed amount every year, and the cost of four employees and their benefits.
You recently moved to a new facility. Where is that located, and why did you move?
It's located on 1480 Castlehaine Road, just off Martin Luther King, just outside of downtown on the northern side. It's a beautiful facility. It was a $13.5 million facility. It was designed by local architects and engineers to meet LEED standards. It was designed, and the reason we built it was we had two very old facilities that we were operating out of. It was inefficient. One of them was on Castle Street in the middle of a low-income neighborhood. We had significant impacts on the traffic in the neighborhood, on light pollution, noise pollution. Really, we were doing a disservice to a residential area by being there. So one of the reasons for the move to get into something that was more modern, more efficient, was also to respect the bottom neighborhood and make sure that whatever was being done at 1110 Castle Street fit more with the neighborhood. And we've moved to an industrial area. Obviously, the facility is more efficient. It's much greener. And it even includes a compressed natural gas fueling station, which we are starting to power our buses on.
You're starting to power your buses with compressed natural gas. You have a couple of new vehicles.
We do. We have two new buses that are powered by compressed natural gas, which is in the transit industry is not as out there as you would see maybe in the automotive industry. There are waste management companies here in the region that power their entire fleets with compressed natural gas. Not only is it much cleaner, it's got lower carbon monoxide, lower particulate matter, but it's much less expensive. We haven't gotten really enough data to do an evaluation, but when we did our study looking into whether compressed natural gas would meet our needs and was something that we should build with a new facility, we found that we'll probably be paying anywhere from 50 to 70 cents per gallon equivalent. And diesel right now is running about $1.70. So at 1,000 gallons a day of diesel, that makes a huge difference in our operating budget.
So you currently have two vehicles running on compressed natural gas. Out of how many vehicles?
Our total fleet's about 65 revenue vehicles. That includes big buses, shuttle buses that are common out at UNCW. We also have a paratransit fleet, which is the smaller vans and maybe smaller shuttle buses you see out there. But a lot of them are due for replacement. So the goal is let's build a station. Let's, instead of retrofitting the vehicles and spending a lot more on vehicles that may be closer to the end of the useful life, let's buy them new and start bringing them in. And so over the next 5 years, we plan to get a significant portion, up to 75% of our revenue vehicles that will be running on compressed natural gas.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about Wave Transit, public transportation in the Cape Fear region. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138. Here to answer your questions today, Albert Eby. He's executive director of the Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority. And we have an email from John who says, a good public transportation system is cost-effective, comfortable, clean, and convenient. Wave fails at least two of these. A bus once an hour is not convenient. Having passengers sitting on overturned shopping carts or sitting on a concrete pad where a bus shelter used to be is not comfortable. Why was it more important to build the new facility than to take care of users? Choice users do not use the system, and people who have no choice but public transit are not treated well. Albert Eby, he raises a number of concerns here that I think you've heard before.
Absolutely. We hear these concerns on a regular basis, and I won't say that I disagree with them. I think someone sitting on an overturned shopping basket not only speaks poorly for the community, but it speaks poorly for the public transportation system. Hour headways, and in some cases on the weekend longer than hour headways, is not convenient, and it's not a convenient way to get around. Unfortunately, we're dealing with very limited sources of funding. Congress hasn't passed, in Washington, D.C., Congress has not passed a long-term transportation bill for over 6 years, which means that we don't have any certainty over funding, over how we replace a $500,000 bus, how we get shelters up. Shelters are a very big challenge here in the region because – and all over the state because NCDOT or the local cities control the right-of-way. So there's a lot of hurdles that have to go through, and they would rather not have impediments to cars in their right-of-way. So these challenges make it more bureaucratic for us to undertake these things. I will say that we've got a very ambitious bus shelter program. Our plan is to get up 50 bus shelters in the next 3 years. That would cover about 15 to 20% of our current routes, which is very beneficial. There's also ongoing costs with bus shelters, so we've got to pick up the trash there. We've got to maintain them. We've got security issues. We've got police issues that we have to deal with when we put up a structure like that. So we're trying to balance everything. Our goal is to be as much as we can to the community within our allocated funding sources.
Can you give us sort of a ballpark idea of what one bus shelter would cost to construct and then to maintain?
The bus shelters themselves are pre-manufactured, so the cost is around $7,000. But when you have to add in survey, engineering, permitting, and installation, the cost can easily exceed $12,000 to $15,000.
And then how much do you have to pay? How much do you have to factor into the operating budget to maintain that bus shelter with all the services you just mentioned?
So every bus shelter that we add adds to our network of maintenance for bus stop shelters. So while we don't have a cost necessarily for each bus stop shelter, the cost as we add bus shelters grows significantly with the manpower we have to get out there and go and service these facilities.
And how much of WAVE's budget does the federal government contribute? What percentage?
It varies depending on the program, but typically the federal government funds about 80% of capital acquisitions and 50% of our operating.
So it's a big chunk.
Yes, ma'am.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking about WAVE Transit with Albert Eby, Executive Director of the Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority. Give us a call with your question or comment or concern at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at coastlinehqr. And when we come back, we have an email regarding DART, paratransit, dial-a-ride. We'll hear from Karen Ann in just a moment. This is Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and with me in the studio today, Albert Eby, Executive Director of the Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority. If you have a question about the bus system or dial-a-ride or any aspect of local public transportation, now's your chance to ask a question or make a comment. You can call us at 910-343-1138, email us at coastline@whqr.org, or tweet us at CoastlineHQR. And just before we went to break, I mentioned an email from Karen Ann, and I have to offer our listeners a full disclosure here. She is the partner of WHQR's Morning Edition host. He's also Coastline's technical director, Ken Campbell. And we asked her, actually, to put her thoughts into an email because she's been forced to deal with some pretty serious challenges, and they are relatively new here. They've been here for about 18 months, and she writes, "I've been a regular user of DART, that's dial-a-ride, paratransit, for the past 18 months or so. Use the service primarily for medical transportation purposes, including trips to the physical therapy clinic, and for transportation to and from my two-day-a-week volunteer job at a local elementary school. I'm physically disabled. I use a wheelchair. And there's a very long list of things I can no longer do. On any given day, when I'm scheduled to ride with DART, transportation is at least as much a source of stress and uncertainty as it is a help." She says, "The DART buses are almost never on time and are often exceedingly late. I've waited in the parking lot at my apartment building, in doctor's offices, or in the vestibule at school for 45 minutes or longer on occasion. There are no updates without contacting DART dispatch when a driver's schedule has been altered or delayed. As a consumer, I'm expected to be ready 15 minutes before the scheduled pickup time, which I consider to be fair. If a driver expects to be 15 minutes late in picking me up, it seems logical and courteous that I be notified so that I may adjust accordingly. And then she writes of what she calls the most egregious example. She had a doctor's appointment recently, was supposed to have been picked up an hour before the appointment. The bus was late, had a few other stops to make before dropping her off. And she says, by the time I reached my destination, I'd missed my appointment. This particular doctor has a strict 12-minute late policy. She was shocked and dismayed. She writes, I sat by myself in the waiting room and cried while I waited for a ride home. How is it possible, I wondered, that I can seemingly do everything right and still wind up the loser, dinged by the very system that has been put in place to make my life better and easier?
I would first start off by saying I apologize for anyone who is affected by our service to the level where it causes physical stress. One of your emailers earlier talked about how efficient or inefficient the fixed route system is. In our goal to be efficient on the paratransit side or on the fixed route side, we have to put as many passengers on the van as possible. Point-to-point transportation is very challenging because a lot of times folks go somewhere, especially to a doctor's office. They don't know how long they're going to wait, so they can't schedule a return time. With very limited resources, we have to take a driver away from his or her quote-unquote schedule to go pick up someone who is waiting at the doctor, which may affect the next person they have to pick up to possibly take to the doctor or take to their employment. So this is one of the greatest challenges. We've done a lot in the last few years with technology. We have automatic vehicle locators on all our vehicles. All our vehicles have tablet computers, which are connected to our dispatchers, so our dispatchers know when someone's being picked up. This also allows them to know where the drivers are at any time and what their schedule is, so they can dispatch them to a waiting passenger who may or may not have a scheduled pickup as soon as possible. So while there are still holes in the system, we're working through technology, through our limited resources, to make sure that we're providing the best service possible. The challenge always comes down to resources as well as the demand for the system. The demand for point-to-point transportation, especially medical transportation, whether it be Medicaid, dialysis, employment transportation, is big in this area. And to balance that is one of our greatest challenges.
She also brings up in her email an example. She says, I witnessed a woman who flatly refused to board the bus at her scheduled pickup time because it would have necessitated an hour in the waiting room at the physical therapy clinic where I was also headed. What surprised me was that she was accommodated. We left without her, and presumably she was added to another already overbooked driver's schedule. I saw her a short while later at the clinic groaning to her therapist about a late bus. Another time I overheard this scenario on the dispatch radio. A driver was waiting for a patient at a doctor's office, but another passenger on the bus at the time was upset because she was going to be late for the intended start of her Walmart shopping excursion. The bus was rerouted to Walmart, which means another driver had to be sent to retrieve Mr. X from the doctor. That bus was probably late too. So she's sort of laying out the question about priorities here. Is that something that Wave Transit can address? In other words, denying some reservations if people are overbooked on medical appointments?
I think that's a perfect example of our greatest challenge. In our efforts to provide a quality customer service to one passenger, we're providing a lesser customer service to another passenger. So how do we balance that? One of the things that the federal government, under the ADA law as well as some public transportation regulations, prohibits us from doing is prioritizing. So someone that's going to the doctor cannot be given any higher priority over someone that's going anywhere else, whether it be less priority to them, to us, to anyone. We've got to treat everybody and every trip with the same level of priority.
So it's just as it comes up. It's just patently illegal for you to consider prioritizing.
Yes, ma'am.
In an overview of maintenance issues that you published just last month, it appears that there are a number of problems that Wave Transit has been besieged by. What are some of the biggest problems that you've seen?
in the report, I think the detail and the main factor that we're dealing with is a rapidly aging fleet. Of our 21 large buses that you would typically see anywhere on the streets of New Hanover County, 16 of those were manufactured in 2003. They have all exceeded their useful life of 12 years or 500,000 miles. So we're having to maintain the level of maintenance to these vehicles at a very high level when there's many things that can't be maintained to a high level. Not only is that more difficult for us, it takes more time, it takes more spare buses, but it's more expensive. So it's the least efficient way to do things. But this goes back to our inability from Washington through the federal gas tax to replace our vehicles in a timely manner. And this is not an issue that's being dealt with exclusively in Wilmington. I've got colleagues in other parts of the state that are dealing with buses that were manufactured maybe in the mid-90s that may be exceeding 1 million miles. And this kind of speaks to the inefficiency of the way transit is funded from Washington. But these are the cards we're dealt, and somehow we have to make them work.
The last month, this recent summer heat wave wasn't kind to WAVE buses, and we saw some of these maintenance issues play out in terms of more customer complaints. And what were those complaints about?
I think the majority of the complaints revolved around comfort. Many of the buses, although the ACs may have been operating at the time, their inability to operate as efficiently as possible, I think, was a big concern of ours. When you open the doors every half a mile, every mile to let folks in and out, you're opening doors in the front of the back of the vehicle, and, you know, air with a heat index of 105 degrees enters the bus. It takes a long time for any HVAC system to recover, but much longer for a system that's not operating as efficiently as it did when it was newer or more in the middle point of its useful life. So those were probably the biggest challenges we faced. Overheating vehicles was a challenge, but we've worked with our contractor. They've worked with other systems throughout the United States to find things that worked in hotter climates, like in Arizona, where we can actually program the engines to have the RPMs just bumped up a little bit so we don't see the overheating issues. But some of the technology that's been introduced into buses in the last 12 years has addressed this, whether it's electric cooling fans over hydraulic fans or just more efficient ways of building and manufacturing a bus, has really kind of left us a little bit behind the curve until we can replace these vehicles.
Also, in that overview of maintenance issues, you wrote about the problems with the third-party employer, with First Transit. And there were some issues so basic, let me just read this. The leadership void was compounded by a local management team apparently unaware of their particular roles and responsibilities. And now you, Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority, are asking First Transit to create an organizational chart and job descriptions? That's sort of mind-bending. Really?
The organizational chart that was submitted with our RFP back in 2011 has changed. And so we're not really asking for an organizational chart and job descriptions. We're asking for updated organizational charts, something that meets the current needs. One of the things we found with our management contractor, First Transit, is that there was a leadership void here. In response to that, they've changed leadership. So I give them credit for that. They have responded well to our request, and they've brought in folks that I think have a better understanding of not only our particular situation, but transit in general. Changing management contractors who employ 100 employees is not like turning on a dime. It's a very big challenge. So we've got to make sure that we do what we need to give them the resources to do the job and make sure that they're meeting our needs, making sure they're meeting the needs of the passengers and the community. But we've also got to make sure that the responsibility is somewhat overseen properly by the transit authority. And so it's a balancing act. There's no doubt about it. I think we've turned the corner. I think we still have some challenges due mostly to the age of the fleet and the lack of time that's elapsed since these problems came to light. I think they got far too out of hand before they were addressed. But I do think that we are on the road back with our maintenance issues, and we have seen a lot better performance just in the last 4 weeks.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about Wave Transit with Executive Director of Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority, Albert Eby. He's here to answer your questions. The phone number is 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And we have Linda from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hello.
Good afternoon. I would just like to say that I've been a passenger of the DART system for the past 3 years, and I'm speaking on the other side. I'd like to say that I have noticed an increased excellence in improvements, I mean, in their system compared to 3 years ago. I have noticed that. I was very frustrated with the system 3 years ago. But in the past 2 years, I have seen a change, and I have seen more of a, they have a challenge that they work around and work with. The drivers work very hard.
Linda, what are some of the specific changes that you've seen, the improvements that you've seen over the last few years?
Well, first of all, I've seen where you can call and ask if the driver is late. You can call back and ask the dispatcher when is the time of arrival expected. They will tell you. They will also send another driver out immediately if it's a case where you might miss your appointment. I've had them do that for me as well.
So are you saying, Linda, that when you communicate, when you call Wave, you get some kind of response?
Yes, I do. I get a response. I do miss the automated messages that we were getting from the system. We used to get automated messages that would let you know at the end of the day when your trip would be arriving and departing the next day. Sometimes we get that, but many times we don't now. I've noticed that is a change. But other than that, you can call in and always double-check. And the dispatchers are very nice. They're very helpful. If something has gone wrong, they will try to rectify it immediately. This is something I didn't find 3 years ago, and I've seen increasingly improvement, as well as they do have tablets that the drivers have their own tablets, which seems to make everything more efficient.
Okay. Well, Linda, thank you so much for your call, and thanks for sharing your experience with us. If you ride Wave Transit, whether you use the Dial-A-Ride, the DART part of the transit system, or if you just get on the regular city buses, give us a call and let us know about your experience, 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And Albert Eby, one of the challenges that always seems to come up when we talk about public transit in this area is the chicken and egg syndrome, the choice riders. You need more riders to fund the system, to expand Wave's ability to provide more bus service. But you also hear people say, well, every time I drive by a Wave bus, I see two or three people on this giant bus, and it just seems like a poor use of resources. Where is Wave capacity right now?
Capacity in any transit system, I don't care if it's the largest to the smallest, could always be more. There are times when our buses have all the seats taken and some folks standing. These are peak hours that are going to peak locations, typically around the hospital. These are routes that are typically running to the places more of our passengers need to go. The challenge for us is to find the balance in providing the type of service to make sure that we're meeting the peak routes, but making sure that folks can get to the peak routes. Someone asked me, an elected official asked me a few years ago, said, well, why don't you just run the buses on the peak routes where all the folks are riding? Well, somehow those folks got to get to those buses, right? So we operate on a time transfer system. So by going out in the farther areas of the county, whether it be all the way down to Pleasure Island or up into the Castlehaine area, we've got to get those folks so they can transfer to the buses to get to the hospital and to get to the university and to get to the areas they need to do to get to go shopping, to go for medical appointments, to go for employment opportunities. So it's kind of a big challenge to make sure that we're not running inefficient service to the far reaches of the county or the entire service area, which goes as far as northern Brunswick County. But we've got to make sure that we're meeting the needs of the entire community, because we're here to serve the entire boundary of the Wilmington Metropolitan Planning Organization, which includes not only Wilmington and northern Brunswick County, all of New Hanover County and Pender County, southern Pender County as well.
Is this area large enough to eventually accommodate a robust, reliable public transportation system that would have primarily choice riders on it? Or is this area just not large enough, like, say, Charlotte, where there are a lot more choice riders?
Typically in transportation, and especially public transportation planning, density is the key. So the more dense your area is, the more likely it is that you're going to have a need for public transportation. Density also leads to increased traffic congestion, increased cost for parking when you get to your ultimate destination, whether it be an employment center or a medical center. So we currently don't have the density. We're a small county, so someday, very far in the future, we may have the density. But we could support a much larger transit system if we were willing to make the investment. So we could get more choice riders if we have more shelters out there, if we run more frequent service. Some folks who have a choice to ride a bus or a car are always going to take their car, but some might leave their car behind if fuel prices are high enough, if congestion's bad enough. So there's a lot of things that play into it, more than just us providing either the service and or the amenities to make transit a viable option for the choice rider.
The National Association of Realtors did a study recently that shows people are moving closer to urban areas for a shorter commute to be closer to amenities. Is there any measurable impact that a strong public transit would have on that kind of growth or on economic growth in general here?
Typically, the type of transit that contributes more to something like that would be the light rail line, the blue line that you see in Charlotte. They've got one to the south. They're building one to the north. These systems are terribly expensive. We just toured the Charlotte's Blue Line extension from downtown to the University of North Carolina Charlotte campus. 9 miles, over $1 billion. That's quite the investment.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's a conversation about public transportation in the Cape Fear region. We're about to go to a brief break. We have one segment left for you to ask Albert Eby, the head of Wave Transit, a question or voice a concern. Give us a call at 910-343-1138. Email us at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back, we'll hear from CJ and Bill. You're listening to Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and with me in the studio once again, Albert Eby, Executive Director of the Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority. If you'd like to ask him a question, give us a call, 910-343-1138, or email us at coastline@whqr.org. And CJ from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you, Rachel. Firstly, I'd like to say thank you for putting on such a wonderful show each week, additionally, thank you to Wave Transit and Mr. Eby for all that they've done for the community.
Thank you for your kind words, CJ. The team appreciates that.
Thank you, CJ.
Thank you. I just wanted to share kind of my story with the audience. When I was younger, a teenager, 18 or so, I lost my license and wrecked my car and was not in a very good place. And Wave Transit was... Without them being in my life, I would have never been able to get a job and go to school and keep a job without having a car. And now, 8-9 years later, I have, I've got a college degree, I've got a graduate degree, and I've got a professional job.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And of course, I listen to WHQR every day. but Wave Transit really does do a whole lot of good. Even if there's one diamond in the rough, you're still helping a lot of people. And even now, I take the bus at least once a month. I try to do it every week, but once a month just to keep things down.
Just to make your contribution to participation in WAVE Transit, is that the idea, CJ?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And you can call me Rachel. Thank you so much for your call, CJ. And we have Bill from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you, Ms. Hilburn, for taking my call, and thank you, Mr. Ely, for being there. My question has to do with better access at stops for the use of buses. I have ridden WAVE Transit, have found it actually to be very comfortable, and I have used public transportation extensively when I lived in Boston, Washington, D.C., suburban New Jersey. And I continue to use public transportation for pleasure and business when I travel domestically and internationally. But in my travels, I have found three components for bus access that I think makes it more attractive to potential passengers. And my question has to do specifically with what is WAVE Transit doing, either through direct funding or applying for grants, to make stops more attractive. And the three specifics I have are electronic signage, which will say when the next bus is due, enclosed shelters, and cutouts. I believe the British call them lays, which will allow a bus to divert into an area cutout and not disrupt mainline traffic.
Albert Eby.
Those are all great methods that can be employed to not only improve safety but improve public transportation access. As I mentioned earlier, we're working extensively on a new shelter program. Part of the shelter program, we're looking at integrating electronic signage because we do have the infrastructure in place on our buses through the cellular network to provide real-time updates. We have that information in Fordham Station, which is one of our transfer locations. So not only can you tell where the buses are at any time, but an accurate ETA based on real-time information from the bus is available. As far as cutouts, that gets to be a little more challenging. NCDOT controls the majority of the road network here in North Carolina and in the New Hanover County. So we've got to work closely with them to make sure that we're putting bus cutouts in areas that make the most sense, not only for us, but for them. We've got integration out of traffic and, more importantly, integration back into traffic. But the real challenge comes from a financial standpoint because bus turnouts can be extremely expensive, mainly because of the cost of right-of-way acquisition.
I was going to say, through eminent domain?
Yes, sir. It's a challenge.
Right.
Thanks so much for your call, Bill. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about WAVE Transit, public transportation in the region. If you have a question or a comment for Albert Eby, Executive Director of Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And we have a question from a listener who says, why is there no bus line from Porter's Neck or Hampstead straight down Market Street to downtown Wilmington? There are plenty of parking lots or lot space in Porter's Neck, and the Market Street corridor is so very overcrowded. This bus line would make a lot of sense. And, of course, that question, Albert Eby, is heightened with the recent approval by City Council of zoning for an Ogden Marketplace. So what would you say to that?
That's a great question. And how we do our planning is our planning has evolved from several different plans. We start with the long-range transportation plan, which has a public transportation aspect, and that's undertaken by the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. Every 5 years, that's a typically 30 to 40-year plan. Every 5 years, we do a short-range plan, and it evolves from some of the more near-term aspects of the long-range plan to look at where we're providing service, how frequently we provide service. We listen really intently to our passengers. We could do this a number of ways. Typically, the two major ways are you could do a convenience model, which is a small service area on a frequent basis, or you could do a coverage model, which is a larger service area on a less frequent basis. We currently employ more of a coverage model going as far as Brunswick Forest to the south, to Pleasure Island, and our current highest need is to go to the Porter's Neck area. That brings up some points for other types of transit initiatives that we've just started getting into. Park and Ride, which is a great opportunity up there. Like you said, there's opportunities for parking lots up there that we could partner with business owners to put some cars in there and transport folks into buses. We've also entered into the van pool market. We've got two vans that go to service a employer in Elizabethtown every day from Wilmington.
Okay,
they fill those vans up.
Going back, sorry to interrupt, sure. But for 1 second, going back to the Porter's Neck question, you're saying that is one of your most requested routes. You're seeing the need for that. Does that mean that that will be added?
It means that it's one of the areas that we know that we need to look intently at, but we've also got to identify the funding. A single bus route can cost as much as $300,000 a year, so that's as much of a challenge as identifying the need.
Okay. And speaking of funding, part of your funding comes from the state. And our producer, Isabel Shepherd, recently spoke with Wilmington City Council member Laura Padgett, who was talking about the impact of McCrory's strategic mobility formula. And let's just listen to what she had to say.
And the new transportation strategic transportation investment program that originated with Governor McCrory, and which on its face certainly was a good idea. Exactly what has happened with it when it went through the legislature into the DOT, that has taken away a great deal of the local MTO, the Transportation Advisory Committee, has taken away that organization's ability to decide which roads and which projects and which modes of transportation to fund. I'm not sure that was intended, but in the end, that's what's happening. So we have less say about what transportation projects we want funded, and then we're getting less money than we used to get at the bottom line.
And Albert Eby, how is this impacting Wave Transit?
Well, first, I'd like to recognize Ms. Padgett as being one of the leaders in public transportation and transportation in the region. She is the reason that we have the type of system we have, because she got the city to come along, and when they were making a minimal investment back in the late 90s and early 2000s in public transportation, and got them to invest more so they could get more of an investment from both the federal and state government. The challenge we face at the state level in public transportation, in addition to what Ms. Padgett was mentioning, is that we're dealing with a defined pot of money. So not only does the money go less far every year, but we're dealing with more systems. As North Carolina continues to go from a more rural state to a more urban state, we're seeing more urban areas pop up, whether they be in areas like Statesville or these smaller areas like Salisbury just outside of Charlotte. So they're taking away funds, or we're having to share a limited amount of funds with those folks who were never in the pool in the first place. So we've got a lot of challenges in this state. We've seen our state operating assistance drop in the last 10 years over 100%, and there's no end in sight. So while we continue to deal with a need for more public transportation, especially on the state side and to some degree on the federal side, we're seeing less participation by those governments in public transportation programs here in New Hanover County.
And does that mean then that local municipalities have to pick up more of the cost?
That, or you have to decrease service, you have to raise fares. We've done a combination of a lot of things. So there's a lot of ways you can do it. The state has added some opportunities for local governments to impose sales tax for transit, vehicle registration fees. Those are things that we have discussed, that we've discussed with our local elected officials and continue to discuss as the need for public transportation evolves here in the region.
And just from a percentage standpoint, the city of Wilmington throws a lot into the pot relatively for Wave Transit.
Absolutely. The city of Wilmington is our biggest funding partner. We have a contract with UNCW that not only allows us to provide intense service around the university, but allows our passengers to utilize those services that we're providing. New Hanover County provides a great deal of what we do because it's typically not a county type function to support public transportation. So our local partners have been outstanding in supporting us. And really our goal is to make sure that we leverage that money as much as possible to bring in the federal and state transportation dollars.
And before I interrupted you to demand an answer to whether there was going to be a Porter's Neck bus route, you were talking about some of the other services that Wave Transit has, some which are relatively new. Van pools, what is that?
So VanPul is kind of a new transit, but we take a select group of employees, and we typically work with the employers. There are federal tax credits and tax breaks for employers to provide public transportation. It can work for employers because they can put in fewer parking spots. It really works for employers that are a little bit farther out, we found. And one in Elizabethtown has found a great quality of employees here in the Wilmington area that they may not find in a more rural area. So they're working with us. We have two vans that go down there every day. They typically have 9 to 12 people on them every day. 95% of that program is subsidized by either the employees. In that case, it's subsidized by the employer as a benefit for their employees. So we're working to build our VanPul program so it has a little bit better impact on not only the region but on the quality of employees that employers can bring in.
So if people wanted to participate in that, they could just get in touch with Wave Transit?
Absolutely.
And you also mentioned Park and Ride.
Park and Ride has been heavily studied and discussed in the current long-range transportation plan being undertaken by the Wilmington Metropolitan Planning Organization. We understand that there's a need for this, but this is also one of those choice riders versus transit-dependent type things that we're going to have to deal with. Is the population density, is the traffic congestion, is parking concerns in the employment areas significant enough that Park and Ride would be successful? If we can add a Park and Ride lot along an already a bus line that already exists, there's no additional cost unless we have to enter into some sort of financial agreement with an owner of some property that we would use for parking. So it could be a win-win if we could use the existing infrastructure to implement a Park and Ride. It's certainly something that we're looking at. We want to make sure that if we implement it, that it's going to have a high chance for success.
Haven't there been some new services implemented in Brunswick County?
We do have a Park and Ride, and this was under the leadership of mostly the Leland Town Council. As they saw the causeway construction coming up, they said one opportunity is to use the Brunswick Connector, which is our fixed route bus that goes across the causeway. We put in some parking there in Leland, a couple, three satellite parking areas. The response has been we have some people that utilize it, so we could say it's been successful. The cost was didn't cost us anything. We worked with the developers and the property owners to give us some dedicated parking spots. The biggest disadvantage is without hot lanes or HOV lanes, you're sitting in traffic whether you're in your car or whether you're on a bus. You can maybe take a little bit of stress out if you're not having to drive, but we don't offer a distinct advantage over a passenger car crossing the causeway. But it has been as successful as we had anticipated, and certainly I think the folks in Leland have been very happy with the results.
And is there any more discussion about bus service to Wrightsville Beach?
No, ma'am, not at this time.
That's a diplomatic answer. That's something that in the past has raised a little bit of controversy.
Service to the beach is a very highly requested service that we get asked about a lot. The way that North Carolina law is written, municipalities can restrict or allow access by public transportation providers over their streets or over the streets that go through their jurisdiction. When we approached it with Wrightsville Beach several years ago, it was something that they didn't have interest in. I think that we are willing to listen and ready to listen when their elected officials in the town does have interest.
And so when the public wants to get on the bus to go to the beach, which beaches can they go to?
On the Wilmington side, we go right up to the bridge to Wrightsville Beach. So if you have a bicycle, our buses have bicycle racks. If you're willing to walk a mile or more, you can get to Wrightsville Beach on our bus fairly conveniently. We do have service all the way to Pleasure Island, so we serve Carolina Beach. That's been a great partnership that's just evolved in the last year. But I think that speaks a lot to the economic development impact that Wave Transit has. In addition to the folks that we directly employ or our contractors directly employ, most of the folks that we take that are transit dependent, we're taking to work. So without Wave Transit, without the services we provide, there'd be a lot of employers here that couldn't get their employees to work, that couldn't provide the type of services they need, whether it be in the service industry or in the manufacturing industry, because they don't have access to employees, because their employees don't have access to transportation.
That's this edition of Coastline. I'd like to thank our guest, Albert Eby of Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority. Thanks also to you, our listeners, and those of you who emailed in your comments. Join us for Coastline every Wednesday at 12:06 here on HQR News 91.3 FM. Coastline is produced by Isabel Shepherd. Our technical director is Ken Campbell. Our webmaster is Melissa Stone. If you missed part of this show, we'll post it on our website, whqr.org, later today. You can also download the podcast from iTunes, and there you can find podcasts of earlier shows. Thanks again for listening. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.